mind. Your name and position.
It's J. Allen Hynek, H-Y-N-E-K. I'm chairman of the Department of Astronomy at Northwestern University and director of the Lindheimer Astronomical Research Center.
When and how did you first get involved with UFOs?
Quite by accident and by propinquity, really. I happened to be teaching astronomy at Ohio State University, which is just a few miles from Dayton. And when the flying saucer era really began in 47 and 48, the responsibility for checking it out and monitoring it was given to the Air Force in Ed Wright Field. And they needed an astronomer to help pass a judgment as to how many of the reports could be attributed to meteors, stars, planets, so forth. And I just happened to be a handy astronomer. And you might say that one thing led to another. I became interested in some of the really oddball cases that clearly didn't have an astronomical explanation, and my curiosity was aroused as to how those might be explained.
Well, with 20 years of experience, what do you feel is the explanation of the UFOs?
I just don't know. In science, if you know the answer in advance, a priori, it's not research. I'm still in the data-gathering phase. And you see, very little effort really has been spent over the past many years. Very few funds have been spent on really looking into the matter. It has been treated with such ridicule and so lightly. It's always has been such a parlor room topic for banter and ridicule and giggling, and aided and abetted by the lunatic fringe, the groups that see in the UFO phenomenon a mechanism for themselves to further their own ideas. Thus, for instance, I've been told that the Second Coming will be in a flying saucer. I think this is a part. There's this tremendous desire on the part of many people to believe in something. They desperately want to. I guess you might say they want to find a more scientific father image in the sky. They would be delighted to have something from the outside come here and help us out. And so, quite uncritically, not asking at all whether they're what the evidence is, they will believe the most rabid cock and bull story if it furthers their preconceived notions. Well, this has reached such tremendous and preposterous levels in the formation of UFO cults, pseudo-religions, that, you can easily see why no serious scientist would have paid any real attention. Most scientists are busy. They have their own projects, their own work, which is yielding results, and they can publish papers and advance in status and in scientific dignity, you might say. Why should they take something that is the province, at least popularly, seem to be the province of crooks and fuzzy thinkers? Even I have felt abashed and rather shamefaced many times in the past 20 years for reading reports. And for instance, I'll have a UFO report on my desk, and a visiting astronomer comes by. Up to now, I've been always rather quick to hide the report. Or if somebody sends me a copy of the Flying Saucer Review, or it's a perfectly respectable magazine, even though the name does seem a little odd, it was shy, or at least shamefaced in a sense, about having any UFO literature or UFO reports around, because the casual visitor coming in and seeing a flying saucer report on my desk would just draw the wrong conclusions. So for quite a while, I just took it very lightly, and whenever I will generally refuse to let myself get into a conversation about it, just toss it off lightly, like, I'm just monitoring the noise level, and which in a sense is what I was doing, because it is the whole problem. It is, as a matter of fact, a question of signal to noise, or static to a real program. There's so much noise, in fact, that so much static, so much crud, that one wonders whether there really is anything of scientific value in it. But over the course of years, these reports have continued to come in from many countries, and there's a great similarity in the reports, regardless of the country. And they have come in from people of many of people of high repute. I used to think, and most scientists who have not looked at the subject at all have the mistaken impression that UFO reports come only from the mentally unbalanced or the weak thinkers. But actually, this isn't so. Of course, quite a few reports do come from people like that. But most of those reports, oddly enough, turn out to be very easily explained. The untutored, unsophisticated person will very understandably mistake a satellite or mistake a meteor for a flying saucer. But it's rather easy to weed those out. I think I would say that the better reports, those that sort of stump me and I can find no logical explanation for, there's a high chance that they come, a report like that comes from a person of considerable standing in their community, of moderate technical training, and certainly we might say with his head screwed on right. And in fact, it's characteristic of these reports, or rather of these people, to write to me and say that the letters almost start with almost a certain sameness. They were right that they weren't going to say anything to anybody about this, but they felt it was their duty as a citizen to do it, and also they recognized that as a university professor, I probably am harmless. I'm not going to give them undue publicity, and they will say that if this will help me in my work, they'll happy to be of any assistance they can, but please don't use my name. And there's another reason why people will write about an unusual sighting, and that is because they themselves are tremendously curious and perhaps somewhat frightened. The letters sometimes end on a rather plaintive note. Can you tell me what it was that we saw? It's something we can't explain. And another thing that's characteristic of the letters and the reports that I get generally personally, and I'm getting quite a few of that sort, where people do not want it reported to any other group, do not want it reported even to the Air Force at times. They try to explain it themselves at first. And it's a sort of what I've called escalation of hypothesis. Take a typical case, one that occurred in Monticello, Wisconsin, some years ago. A group of four people, ranging in ages from 60 to a young girl of 12, and the main protagonist was a graduate student of anthropology at a Midwestern University, said to me, and I talked with them for hours, and they were just truly puzzled, but completely sensible people. They said at first we thought it was an accident up on the road ahead of us, as we saw what we thought were flashing flashlights. And then they said we realized it couldn't be that because it was too high. And then we thought it was an airplane about to crash. And as it came closer, we saw that it wasn't that, and then we saw it was something that we'd never seen before in our lives. And a little girl who was in the back seat threw herself on the floor at the back of the car and just hit her head in terror. And I was told later by her mother that she'd, for weeks later, had nightmares and was a thoroughly frightened girl. All the people saw were a geometrical arrangement of lights, white and red, that looked, as they explained it, something like a traveling clothes tree or thing you hang your hat on. And it's suspended quite an angle because as they along the side of the road there were telephone wires, and they could see part of this object. I don't know if there's an object, but I'll say object. This apparition. Part of this apparition was well above the wires and a part below. So it's suspended, we computed, about 25 or 30 degrees. And they estimated, although they were smart enough to realize that they didn't know really how far away it was, they estimated it to be, they felt it was close. They felt it was just a matter of 100 yards away. Well, that's one case. Now, we've had many, many, many cases of people who've said that their cars had been buzzed by very bright lights, the lights being so bright that they couldn't see the object behind them. People have reported that animals have become frightened. And in some reports, the first warning that something was strange came from animals in the barn raising a fuss. Now, animals, I don't believe, hallucinate. So I always rather like to get a case of that sort because it brings in another sort of witness, at any rate. And they report that ignition systems on cars fail. Now, this seems on the face of it preposterous. How can the ignition system of a car fail? How can the lights go out by themselves and the radio stop? I can certainly see that a man may get excited, jam the brakes on, and kill the engine, but that doesn't put the lights out, and it doesn't stop the radio. And if a report like that came from people of the batty people, well, I would disregard it, but confound it, they don't. You see, they come from people who have held responsible positions in their communities for a number of years. They come from pilots. They come from policemen, the same policemen whose testimony could send you to the chair under certain circumstances, will testify to these things and will not be believed. So you see what the problem is. It's a strange phenomenon.
Do the cases that you feel are impressive, do they include any occupant cases at all?
A very few. Now, you said impressive. Yes, the impressive ones, some of the impressive ones do, but it is so far as the correlation runs, the ones that are the most impressive from occupant state or especially from communication standpoint, because those are the so-called contactee ones, where there's an actual communication, either by words or by mental telepathy, has taken place, up to now, have not, as far as I can see, come from people of high credibility as the lesser those of lesser spectacularity. But the reports of that sort do exist in many countries. As a matter of fact, some of the best reports from the standpoint of being spectacular have come from the Latin American countries. Well, now one frequently can say, and my colleagues have told me, well, you really can't believe what those people say. They're volatile and excitable and all of that. On the other hand, what are the criteria for disbelief? What does it take not to believe a report, you see? It's not only one must not only ask what does it take to believe a report, and must also ask under what conditions will I not believe a report? And this is the dilemma I find myself in. And what we need is not to jump to conclusions, to say that UFOs are or are not visitors from space. That is not the issue. The issue is what causes the reports. The reports are the things that exist. They are the UFOs. We must find out what has caused the report, and then, after we establish the validity of the report, then and only then, start to theorize.
Well, obviously, you feel that there are enough of these reports to warrant it being taken seriously scientifically.
Oh, yes.
Do you have any guess about what the findings will be? Will we find that these are extraterrestrial?
I just won't go on a limb and venture to say that because I recognize that because of my peculiar position, having been the Air Force's consultant in this for so many years, that I do bear a strange responsibility, not because of myself, but simply because of the circumstances. I recognize that I really sort of have it in my power to mobilize the mass credulity of the world if I came out and held a press conference and maintained stoutly that we were being visited by extraterrestrials, then all I can say is that when I do say that, if I ever do come out and say that, I will be pretty darn sure that I'm right. It will not be a guess, but it will be based on definite evidence.
What would you like to see done to further this whole, the whole problem of finding answers to these questions?
That's a very good question. I'm very happy to answer that. I would first of all like to see the problem attacked in two distinct ways. I would say the what you might call passive and active. The two approaches, I think for want of a better word, although it's descriptive, I'd say passive and active. By passive, I mean the attacking the wealth, the mountain of reports, not only in this but other countries, and doing something about them. Now, what do I mean by doing something about them? First of all, I mean putting them into machine-readable form so that they're put on magnetic tape and the modern methods of data analysis and pattern recognition and numerical analysis applied to them. Reports today exist in the Air Force as well as other places as letters, as forms, as questionnaires, as papers of different sizes, folders of different sizes. This is hardly a systematic, scientific way of handling data. So the first thing is to devise a good method of data processing. And I feel it is there's not any point to just handling United States cases alone, but since reports have come in from more than 70 other countries, we should likewise analyze those. There should be a central clearinghouse, and I would like to see the United Nations act as that clearinghouse. The UNESCO, for instance, might very well, without committing itself, being a service. It's like a World Health Organization is a service for the distribution of vaccines or the gathering of data. It'd be rather silly if there were an unknown plague, a disease, if we concentrated only on how that disease acted in one country. We'd want to find out how it acted in all countries. In other words, the analysis of the reports and concentrating on what I call the high sigma, high C cases. By that I mean cases that are, the sigma is what I call the strangeness index. That is, you can assign a number to any report from, say, 1 to 5, depending on its strangeness. 1 and 2 would be things that are easily explained, satellites, birds, that sort of thing, which nonetheless have puzzled some people, but there was no reason to puzzle them because it was it had a perfectly natural explanation. And the high sigma cases, the high strangeness cases, that are simply those that are not explainable in ordinary terms. But still, we haven't said anything here about believing those reports. You can have several strange cases. The question now is, can they be believed? Well, now one can also assign another number to a report, or rather to the people who made the report. I call this my credibility index. The credibility index doesn't take into account the report. It takes into account the people. What is the general reputation of the people? Have they taken a lie detector test? Do they have a medical record? Have they any sort of a record of being pranksters, of being liars? Are they the sort of people who you'd believe if they told you that they saw you go through a red light? Or saw someone go through a red light? In other words, are they just ordinary, credible people? Now, when you combine the two, you can have a strange report told by someone or people of low credibility, which you can disregard. However, the reports to concentrate on are clearly the high sigma, high C, the strange reports of high credibility. Now, those reports should be studied in great detail, and no effort spared to squeeze any scientific information out of them possible. These are the ones that should be studied by modern electronic methods, and we should get all the patterns of motion, patterns of geometry, patterns of geographical distribution, of temporal distribution, all that sort of thing. It is rather interesting and rather sad, in a way, that the phenomenon of UFOs has existed now so long, and never has there been what I would call a real, thorough investigation of any good case. I mean by good investigation, I mean in the same sense that the FBI would investigate a kidnapping, for instance, sparing no expense or time to get to the bottom of things, or a bank robbery, or a counterfeiting ring. But UFOs have been regarded as so much the province of the kooks and the lunatic fringe that serious scientists have simply not taken the time or trouble to look at them, to look at the data. Well, that's the passive. I think we'd get someplace that way. At least we'd get much farther than we are. It is unlikely, however, that no matter how many reports you analyze, you're going to get any definite answers. You're simply going to get a greater degree of probability that something really strange is going on. The active phase is, well, going out and getting one. Actually, if you, after all, if UFOs exist, I mean, if there is something tangible, if there's something, some substance behind the report, then we should be able to go out and get at that substance by photograph, or, well, that's photograph perhaps the best. Now, there are areas in the country which seem sometimes to be what you might call UFO hot. And there have been many cases in which a witness of a strange sighting, you might say a UFO happening, or who has had a UFO experience, has had time to call the local police, and they have come out, as happened in Ravenna and in Exeter and other places. The police have actually come out and seen the same thing. But unfortunately, in none of those cases did the policeman have a camera. So one of the things I would like to strongly recommend is that every squad car in the country have a loaded camera in the glove compartment. These cameras are, a camera is of that sort would be cheaper than a gun. And it seems to me that if the local Kiwanis groups or Rotarians or some of the civic-minded groups took it upon themselves to equip their own immediate community with squad cars that have cameras, or cameras for squad cars, rather, we might today, or might soon, have some real pictures. But I'm also suggesting a central bureau, a central switchboard. Let us take this case that I described in a popular magazine recently, a case in which a man and his family were driving along and were frightened out of their wits by the approach of an extremely bright light that buzzed their car, they said caused the engine and the radio and the lights to go out, and very soon thereafter departed and everything returned to normal. If they had been able to hurry to a roadside telephone, call a central number that would might be called UFO 1000, that could be used, that would be it's connected to some central switchboard, which was manned 24 hours a day by a group of experienced interrogators who could tell in two or three questions whether there was any substance to the report or whether it was just nonsensical or a common object. Now then, if the interrogator at the opposite end of that line became convinced after a few questions that this was something worth investigating, the investigator could call the local police chief in that area, and by this time the police chiefs would know to take a thing like this seriously, and they would get out there and we'd get some data, first-hand live data. And all we need is a good photograph, and really, honest to goodness, authenticated photograph. We have photographs, but what can you say of them? They're photographs. We don't really know whether they're really authentic photographs or whether they are fakes. Well, so anyway, that I would say is the, you've asked me the question of what I would recommend. I think maybe one thing in addition, I would recommend the thorough investigation of a few selected cases, maybe just a dozen, But all we need is one case that has been thoroughly investigated to one case like that might produce the evidence that would convince the scientific world that there is something of value in this subject. It's a thing, it's a question, a problem that I would like answered myself, because as a sort of a one-man team, I simply don't have the time, obviously, to do justice to this problem.
You indicate that scientists have not gotten into this, nor even the Air Force, very much, because it was the province of the kooks. Well, there have also been charges that actually scientists have gotten into this, that the Air Force has gotten into it, and that secrets are being kept from us. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's a question that I get asked quite frequently. Am I just a part of a cover-up? Is Project Blue Book just a part of a cover-up? Because it strikes the average citizen that take the average citizen who finally gets down and reads something about UFOs and reads some of the reports and stories, it's inconceivable to him that our government, which is so security conscious and would spend all sorts of money on CIA to do this and that, it would seem impossible that our government could be so stupid as not to have investigated something that seems something like this. So they will question me, well, you mean, I've had many people come to me and say, well, you mean to tell me that here this person saw this thing, said he saw this thing land, not just one person, but there are witnesses. And this was observed in the radar. This was observed at a missile base. This was observed by an Air Force pilot. You mean to tell me that the CIA or the FBI or some high group in the government hasn't investigated this? They just can't believe their senses, I guess, because it seems to them that obviously this would have been investigated, you see. On the other hand, here we have the Condon Committee charged by the government to look into this. And not only are they charged to do it, but they are supposed to have their report reviewed first by the National Academy of Sciences. It's sort of inconceivable to me that there would be a conspiracy which would be making fools of the National Academy of Sciences, which is what would be doing. If the Condon group, for instance, were a cover-up group and just sort of a smokescreen, well, this is not saying that they're just making a fool out of Condon, but they would be making a fool out of the whole National Academy of Sciences, and a fool of me, too, as far as that goes. So I have no evidence, no real evidence, that there is a conspiracy or that things are covering up, because, first of all, it's pretty hard to keep a secret over that length of time, and I feel that I would have, sooner or later, discovered some physicist friend or some psychologist friend I would have stumbled upon the fact that they were investigating it.
So, you go... So you go back to the same hypothesis, then, that this has just been so in the kook area that no one has taken it seriously.
I think this is the one is driven to, that it seemed so preposterous that no one wanted to pay attention to it. It's something like somebody coming in and saying, there's a horse in your bathtub. Well, how many people would go look and say, oh, you're kidding me? And, of course, there's some people who would take the thing seriously, but wouldn't even go to find out, but they'd ask, what's the color of the horse? Of course, there's some people who would take the thing seriously, but wouldn't even go to find out, but they'd ask, what's the color of the horse? Those who believe that there are horses in bathtubs, you see. So, it's a very strange phenomenon. It certainly is a phenomenon which has caused a great deal of interest. It has, the Gallup poll people said that when they conducted the poll on UFOs, the people exhibited the highest awareness index of any question they'd asked. In other words, you didn't have to tell people if they asked, do you believe in UFOs, or what about UFOs? You didn't have to explain the term UFO to them. They already knew it's part of the language, you see. So, and the names that are given to UFOs in different countries, every language has its name now for UFO. OVNIs in the Latin American countries, Booth does in Russia, and Patrici Stalici in Czechoslovakia. Oh dear, oh, every nation, every language has a term for it now. So it's rather strange that anything that has grabbed, you might say, so many people for such a great length of time has not had more scientific attention. And this is all I've been asking for, that the thing be given attention. I will not, as some of my colleagues, relative few, have looked at the data and become so impressed with the data that they have gone, I would say, off the deep end and have become themselves, you might say, true believers. They feel that the evidence is overwhelming, that we are being visited by extraterrestrial beings. I must say that if we take the reports at face value and don't try to look at other possibilities, one is sort of almost driven to that. But I personally, as yet, will not be driven to it. I feel that there's many things about this universe that we don't know, and this whole UFO phenomenon, I believe, is quite real, but does not necessarily mean intelligences from other solar systems.
What are the other possibilities?
Well, there's possibilities of that it's, the whole thing is a natural phenomenon. Now, of course, if I knew what that was, that would be, we'd have answers. But let us imagine that, well, let us do this. Let us imagine that we're sitting around some campfire in the covered wagon days, and the days when horsepower was the only motive power we had, and somebody were talking about nuclear energy, for instance. The term nuclear energy wouldn't have even had any meaning. We didn't know in those days that the atom had a nucleus. You see, in 100 years, look at how the picture's changed. Suppose somebody had said, well, someday we're going to have such a powerful explosive that it can be equivalent to a million tons of TNT or something of the sort. Well, they would have said, how are you going to get this? You'd say, well, it's something about the universe we don't understand yet. And in less than 100 years, that what we at that time didn't understand about the universe was the structure of the atom, the nucleus. Now, it could very well be that the whole UFO phenomenon is a signal, an index, of another kind of property of the natural universe that we as yet have not recognized. And then, beyond that, if I go any farther, it'll be just pure science fiction.
You mentioned earlier that in many of the letters there were signs of fear. Do you think scientists also fear these?
Well, the great majority of scientists have not as yet looked, have not read enough reports, have not done enough homework to be frightened. And as a result, you see, today science is riding very high, and I think rightfully so. I wouldn't be a scientist if I didn't think so. Scientists' judgments are generally accepted. Scientists are respected in their communities, and what they say very frequently carries a great deal of weight. So that when practically the entire scientific establishment says there's nothing to it, it's utter nonsense, the public doesn't know that these scientists are saying that not as a result of careful study of the data, which they assume that before a scientist would say that something was debunked, that he has looked at it carefully, understands it, has examined the data. They don't know that what the scientist has really done is has abdicated momentarily from his scientific Hippocratic oath, you might say, and where he's supposed to weigh and consider carefully. But it has simply said, in effect, short-circuited the whole thing. Says, well, the whole thing's so preposterous, it can't be, therefore it isn't. And this is the thinking process that has gone on, you see. So, I guess that's about all I can say on that point.
You said you would not commit yourself on the matter of this being extraterrestrial. Do you think it is possible that it could be? Do you think from another galaxy people could come here, or humanoids, I should say, of some kind, could come here?
Well, Let's first of all take up the point as to whether other civilizations exist or can exist. I think most astronomers today, most scientists would say the evidence, well, not evidence, because we don't have evidence, except of a statistical nature, but it would seem preposterous, statistically preposterous, that the sun would be the only star out of billions of trillions to have planets, or at least one planet with intelligent life on it. It seems it would be an utter sport of nature if that were the case. It would be something like saying that only my cat can have kittens. No other cat in the world can have kittens, only mine. So only our star, the sun, can have planets. No other one can have them. Well, it doesn't seem right. It just doesn't seem likely. But, of course, the problem is getting here. The distances we know are so vast. And ordinary principles of physics, our present understanding, I can put it this way, that according to our present understanding of physics, it would be impossible. But, of course, I can also imagine somebody writing a paper, a very learned paper, in the year 1900, and saying that it's utterly impossible, by all the laws of physics, to have an explosive greater than TNT. They would give learned equations about showing the ultimate in chemical reactions, and showing that clearly anybody who would believe that you could have an explosive much more powerful than TNT is enough. And yet we have Hiroshima. Now, recently Markowitz in Science has showed quite conclusively, or quite well at any rate, that UFO reports do not obey classical physics. This is something I wouldn't have argued with 10 years ago. Obviously, the reports don't obey classical physics. But neither do atoms obey classical physics. And whereas Markowitz has suggested that because the UFO phenomenon doesn't obey classical physics, that the Air Force and the Condit Committee in Colorado should shut their doors, he might very well have suggested 30 or 40 years ago that we stop all our physics laboratories because atoms don't obey classical physics. So he's excellent as far as he's gone, but he has written a fine treatise on cows, whereas the problem concerns oranges. So, I guess that's about all I can say on that point. The scientists, however, in approaching this problem, and I would say that if it hadn't been for the accident of my having been asked to look at this, I would be numbered in that same group. I know it. Because I simply wouldn't have taken the time to look at it, and I would have said, well, it's obviously nuts, and so why bother? The scientist is so frequently trapped in his own manner of thinking, he should think more like a philosopher than as a scientist at times. Well, I guess we've come a long way.
In your position, you've reaped a lot of criticism over the years that you sat on the data for 18, 20 years without doing anything about it, that you've debunked a lot of reports that were otherwise taken quite seriously, such as Michigan and the swamp gas, and now you're being criticized because you said, let's look into these things. What is your position on all this criticism that's been heaped on your head?
Well, it certainly has been heaped, I must say. But as a scientist, science starts with healthy skepticism. See, there's a difference between being open-minded and being credulous. Open-minded means that you are willing to look into a matter, but it doesn't mean that you're going to accept any cock and bull story. So often people mistake open-mindedness with credulity. But without doubt, even today when I go to Wright Field and look at the examiners as I do each month, the reports that have come in, my first attempt is literally to knock down every report that comes in and tear it to shreds, see if it'll stand up. I will not go to great lengths to try deliberately to explain away a thing. But when a thing is obviously Venus and the moon, I'm not going to say that it's something else. Or when very clearly I see that a report is a meteor, represents a meteor, or a mirage, then I will simply have to pit my scientific understanding of things like that over against 10 or a dozen witnesses who just don't understand those things. So I do deliberately go out and try to find a logical, physical explanation for every report that comes in. And as I go through these reports that I field each month, I may go through 20, 25 that are just run-of-the-mill garden variety, you might say, UFO reports. And then suddenly one comes along, which is a corker. Generally, by several witnesses of, as far as I can see, good repute. And I have no reason, a priori, to negate their story. Therefore, then I come across that, and I've got to really take a very solid and serious look at it. Nonetheless, I still try to find some natural explanation, sometimes reaching fairly far. Now, in the swamp gas case that you mentioned, I did not give that as the final, definitive solution. I merely suggested at the time, in my press release, that swamp gas was a possible physical solution, because after all, when in two locations you see lights for several hours, and the lights are in both cases associated with the swampy area, isn't it logical to say that maybe the swamp has something to do with the lights? Well, as you may recollect, that was a very hectic news conference. I understand from my friends that it was the largest news conference, press conference, ever held in the Detroit Press Club. It was a madhouse and a wild circus, really. As soon as I got the word swamp gas out as a sort of possible explanation, the reporters jumped on that. That was it. Not only was swamp gas the solution of the Michigan thing, but as far as the reporters were concerned, it was the solution for all the UFOs. Well, this is not at all what I meant. But nonetheless, I must admit that I've been criticized quite a bit for being a debunker, and I will unabashedly say that anything that I can do to debunk the crooks and debunk the crackpots and the shysters and the charlatans and the people who write cockeyed books on the subject and make a fast buck, then I think I'm doing a service and being a debunker. But there are two sides to the coin, two sides to the situation. When I do come across a group of serious people of good repute who, in all seriousness and honesty, have made a report that they didn't want to make but felt that they should make it because of their civic duty or out of a very deep sense of scientific curiosity, then it is my duty to take those reports seriously and do what I can to find out what was the cause of the report. And so we finally come to the crux of the matter and the real question. The real question, at the moment at any rate, quite contrary to public popular opinion, the question is not whether UFOs, as reported, are extraterrestrial visitors or the results of extraterrestrial visitation. That's jumping too far ahead. The question that must be answered, and the central scientific question, is what causes the UFO reports. They might be extraterrestrial. We must keep that possibility in mind, even though we know of no physical means of transporting a being from a distant solar system here. Our physics, our knowledge of the solar system, of natural law, simply does not encompass this. We don't know how. But still, we must leave it, in all fairness, as a possibility. But the universe has been full of surprises in the past 100 or 200 years, and I don't think we're at the end of our surprises yet. The UFOs may represent a phenomenon which would be as strange to us today and as unexplainable, because we don't have the words, the means to look at it, to even think about it, as nuclear energy would have been to our forefathers.